This podcast is from Allegro Non Troppo on Joy Melbourne 94.9 radio station, Melbourne, Australia, and is produced for you by Adam, Peter and Robert. Hello and welcome to Allegro Non Troppo across Australia on the Community Radio Network. Allegro Non Troppo would like to thank the Community Broadcasting Foundation for ongoing funding.
Mental Health Week is upon us. We all have mental health issues from time to time. Some are fleeting, some are chronic. Frequently, mental health issues are more about developing coping mechanisms and finding the cause.
Depression and low self-esteem seem to be the mental health issues that are most prevalent in the gay and lesbian community.
Most of us go through some sort of depression at some stage in our life, usually as a result of situations or trauma or maybe chemical imbalance in the body. We get over it, but some people don't.
There are other disorders that affect the community, like schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, but depression seems to be the most prevalent, and gay and lesbian people, in particular youth, are very susceptible to it.
Today we're going to talk to Rob Mitchell, as well a well-known campaigner on these issues, and to Sam, a young woman who's experienced depression.
Hello, Rob, and welcome to the show once again.
G'day, Adam. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. And welcome, Sam.
Hi, how's it going?
Today we're going to talk about depression in the lead-up to Mental Health Week, which starts on the 4th of October. We're going to look at some of the issues as they affect the gay and lesbian community, but also some of the other things. Rob Mitchell's been going out of his way, as he does, with a particular issue that he would like to bring up with us. Tell us a little bit about it. We might start off with that before we start looking at the personal stories.
Well, Adam, I guess the real issue that I have with Mental Health Week and also the mental health sector is that we have Beyond Blue, which is the National Depression Initiative, which is consuming vast amounts of public money and is purporting to better the cause of mental health, not only for GLBDI, but for all sorts of subpopulations in Australia. So they do work with neonatal pregnant mums, they do work with Indigenous Australians, they do work in rural areas, and they certainly have done significant work there over a number of the last sort of decade or so. But when it comes to GLBDI or same-sex attracted people, we get sweet FA from them. And so that, for, you know, from that point of view, I think it's unconscionable when we look at the statistics that they don't do anything. You look at the depression rates in same-sex attracted people, it ranges from 20 to 30% versus 5% in the straight population. Clearly, there is a problem there that needs to be addressed.
And what's Beyond Blue's response to this?
Well, Beyond Blue, it's a combination of a bit of smoke and mirrors. You know, yes, we are doing something, we are doing something. They're doing something generally refers to putting PDF files on their web server, and even that's only a relatively recent phenomenon. They were sort of lent on in the middle of 2008 to commission a research summary of all the existing research, which was done by La Trobe University. But that was only done after they were lent on. And that research was commissioned in June 2008 and was given to them in the latter quarter of 2008, September, October 2008. And then again, there was this sort of deafening silence of about 9 months until again the media was pointed at them in the form of the Sunday Age and their health reporter, asking them some pointed questions about what was going on, and then there was another burst of activity, and it all seems to have died down again.
Beyond Blue are a national organisation.
Correct.
Okay. But they operate on state basis as well?
What they do is they get federal funding from Nicola Roxon, or the Federal Health Department, of around $9 million per year, and they also get funding from all the states. Now, interestingly, Victoria provides more than all the other states and territories combined. So we kick in about $3.5 million a year here in Victoria. They get a significant amount of funding from the Movember Foundation, which is the Grow a Mo thing in November. They kick in about $5 or $6 million a year, and then the balance comes obviously from the other states and territories and a bit of other community funding.
Okay, let's explore some of these issues a little bit first. Why Beyond Blue? There are other agencies you could have got stuck into. Why did you pick Beyond Blue?
My problem, Adam, with Beyond Blue is quite simple. They say they are doing something and they are not. Okay, it's as simple as
that. How do you know?
That.
I'm playing devil's advocate, but I want to find out the issues.
Because everybody else in the mental health sector points to Beyond Blue. They won't do it publicly, of course. They won't go on the record. And they say, well, look, you know, when you actually have a look at what's on the ground, there isn't anything there. And that's the problem. If you and you know, as this week, their CEO, Leonie Young, was on the ABC saying, oh, no, look, we do need to, you know, we are doing something and we need to do more research, but there's nothing on the ground. And my problem is that they only seem to actually inch forward when they're beaten around the head. And that is simply not good enough. It's not good enough full stop because we're tipping community money in, point one. Point two, the community money that they're vacuuming up, they are, you know, stressing out an already stressed mental health system because, you know, there is not one person in the mental health sector who will tell you that mental health is properly funded. So that is a real problem there. And the final point is that there seems to be no recognition from them that what they're doing is dangerous because they are saying to the broader community, GLBDI or same-sex attracted mental health, we're on it.
Uh-huh.
I'm sorry, when you say dangerous, in what context?
Well, you look at the, let's have a look at the population stats while they've been going. In the decade that they've been around, close to a decade, the number of 15 to 24-year-olds in Australia has gone from 2.7 to 3 million. That's 300,000. The Writing Themselves In research from La Trobe University tells us that of that 300,000, 30,000 or 10% will be same-sex attracted. So in that 30,000, As I said before, the broader rates in the straight population of depression and suicidal thought runs at about 5%. In that 30,000, the absolute minimum rate of depression and suicidal ideation is going to be 20% or 6,000. And that's a population that's not getting any attention from Beyond Blue. Now, you know, you look at the Senate inquiry that's been announced, the other inquiries that are going on in Queensland and Western Australia, and there's a lot of hand-wringing about why the suicide rate is not going down. In fact, the Australian Bureau of Statistics is taking the extraordinary step of restating the figures of suicide for the year before because they now know that they're inaccurate. And that's one of the things that's prompted the Senate inquiry.
Rob Mitchell, why is the suicide rate not going down?
It's not going down because the proportion of people in that subpopulation that needs the most help is not getting any attention.
What sort of attention and help do they require?
Well, what they do is they need the same sort of attention that other subpopulations are getting.
Which is?
Well, they need programs, they need campaigns, and we need to look at the core reason why there's a difference of, you know, 5% in the straight population and 20 or 25% in the people who are not straight. And we know why. The research tells us that the systemic degradation and vilification that those people receive, particularly the young people, is not being addressed. Okay. Now, we also know, for example, you know, apart from schools, the old favourite, sporting clubs are a problem. And we've got, you know, organisations like the Australian Sports Commission, we've got the Australian Football League, all starting to go down that road of doing something. They are, you know, they genuinely are, you know, getting into gear. In fact, if I had to nominate the one man who is going to make the most difference to youth GLBDI suicide in the next 12 months, it's going to be Andrew Demetriou.
Okay. Let me just put this into another context, this particular issue. During Allegro over the last 2 years, I've interviewed a lot of people in different situations, and one of the ones that absolutely stunned me and surprised me when we were looking at something where I thought it would be quite difficult to be gay, right? Because what we're talking about is being comfortable with sexuality, being accepted by your peers and those around you. As we did for Anzac Day, we did four shows leading up to Anzac Day, and we've got a couple of soldiers in here, gay soldiers, and I sort of said, so how difficult is it for you being gay in the army? And he said, it's not difficult at all. It's fine.
That's right. Because they've exercised leadership. And that's the magic word that we all look for with GLBDI and with health, is leadership. And we're not getting it. And we're not getting it from what is supposedly the organisation that is the National Depression Initiative. Now, initiative is a noun in the dictionary, but in this context, it's a verb. It's a doing thing.
So is it just Beyond Blue or is Beyond Blue one of them? Because I get the feeling you have a personal issue with Beyond Blue.
I don't have any personal issue with Beyond Blue. And I know that you're alluding to the comments that were attributed to their chairman, Jeff Kennett. And I just want to make it really crystal clear. I don't care if Jeff Kennett's homophobic. I don't care if he's transphobic. I don't care if he's Lutheran. Okay, but the organisation, Beyond Blue, the National Depression Initiative that is vacuuming up, you know, 20-something million a year, and since its inception, close to $130 million, That's the organisation that needs to be addressing this health issue. And, you know, I do not speak to anybody that tells me and says they are happy with the mental health figures, these rates of suicidal ideation and depression in same-sex attracted people.
Okay, let me just qualify that a little bit from personal experience. There was a Four Corners show on about 2 years ago that was about gay youth suicide, and they said that 300 teenagers, Australian teenagers who are gay and lesbian, kill themselves every year. So that's about one a day. We did 5-year training course focused on youth at this radio station. We had 120 people come through and do accredited training. They all brought a few friends. So we had around about 360 young people came to this station who did training. They became presenters. They got involved. But there's one statistic out of that I cannot get over. Three of them are dead.
Well, I know that to everybody listening, you know, that we're clearly going to be, you know, people are going to connect with this, you know, in a very, very profound way. But I was at a conference 2 weeks ago, and I was speaking to one young man who was 21, and he said to me, Rob, he said, you know, this has got to be sorted. 9 of my friends suicided last year.
I can count 20-odd people that I know, young people, over the years. I've been a teacher who've suicided.
And we're talking about youth here. Anecdotally, I understand that in Melbourne, from the conversations I've had with a couple of people, that they say that the biggest cause of death of HIV-positive, as far as they are concerned, is suicide.
Why? What happens to gay and lesbian youth that causes this higher rate of suicide? What particular issue is happening to them?
Okay, we are really, really clear on this. What causes the differential rates of depression, so 5% of the straight population up to 30% in the not straight population, is the systemic degradation and vilification of the young people. We know that. We know it in spades. Right. But yet we do jack shit about it. And that has got to change.
Okay. And looking at the example I gave before of the army, if such a bastion of straightness like the army can change and be inclusive and tolerant and supportive, so can other parts of society. Let's find out a little bit about what actually depression is. Because up until about 10 years ago, my opinion was depression was people just need to snap out of it and get on with their lives. Until I actually experienced it for 3 weeks. I went through 3 weeks of absolute hell. I'd been depressed for the first time. I had a hideous partner who tortured me emotionally. And I was actually, for the first time, I'd experienced depression. But I got over it fairly quickly, and I've never been depressed since.
And you probably weren't actually depressed. You were going through a down period. But I think, I mean, from my knowledge of depression, is it something that happens over a pronounced period of time? You don't usually just have it for 3 weeks.
Okay, but we'll bring Sam in at this juncture. Sam, you had depression. Can you tell us your story about depression?
Sure. Well, I suppose I've been... I'm 25 now, and I've had maybe 4 or 5 major episodes of depression throughout my life that I can think of. I suppose the first time when I really sort of sank into a very dark period of depression was when I was in year 7, or when I was 11 or 12 years old. And a lot of difficult things have been going on in my personal life. I'd been kicked out of my dad's house and moved in with my mum. And that was the first time when I really experienced what I've come to be very familiar with, which is, real feelings of despair and emptiness, inability to get up in the morning, inability to go to sleep at night, inability to connect with anyone or really do anything productive during those periods. During that period, I was unable to leave the house for about a month, so I didn't go to school for a month when I was in year 7, and it was only after the education department intervened and put me into a different school that I actually started going back to school. So that was my first experience with depression. And
that's very severe for year 7. So how about you were 11 or 12 and you went to this almost incapacity of being able to do anything? Oh, goodness gracious. What happened next?
Well, I suppose in that period I eventually did start going to a different school, and I was in a different living environment. I was living with my mum, who's a lot more supportive than other members of my family. And that sort of got me out of it that time. And I think a lot of the time, changing circumstances can be a really positive thing, meeting new people and moving on. So, yeah, finished primary school at a different school and went into high school. And it wasn't until I was in year nine when I had another very sort of difficult run of things that I had another bout of depression. My stepbrother committed suicide. He was 19. And yeah, that sort of put me into that very special dark place again for about 3 months.
Tell us what happened. So when you get depressed, tell us what your life is like when you're depressed.
Sure. Well, I suppose the first thing that happens, for me anyway, in my experience, it is triggered by a very difficult life event. And I suppose for the first period, there's the utter despair and grief that comes along with that, the tears and so on. But I suppose once the tears stop, for most people, I guess you kind of pick yourself up and, you know, dust yourself off and sort of get back into things. But it's never really been like that with me. I, you know, developed, I suppose, a sense of emptiness and numbness, disinterest in the things that I used to be interested in or used to find joy in. And I suppose when I was a teenager, the issue was after going through periods like that and thinking thoughts that you know, other your peers aren't really thinking about or having to go through, you do come out of the experience feeling very isolated because you have been through traumatic life events and have thoughts that I suppose are more mature or more difficult than a young person needs to encounter. So you end up feeling very isolated, which just exacerbates the experience. So it really takes a long time to come out of it. And I think for me, the only thing that's really gotten me out of periods of depression is abrupt change, travel, going on holiday, getting a dog or something like that to actually try and snap you out of the experience. But it's certainly not an overnight thing, and it's really an uphill battle, and you've really got to be your own best friend during those periods.
Did you get any help?
I haven't received any formal help for my depression, and I certainly didn't consider myself to be somebody with depression until I was in my early 20s, until I put my arm through a window when I was about 21, which is about 4 years ago now, and had my arm in a sling for quite a while, ended up in hospital for a while. And at that point, you know, really when I got to that crisis point, I started thinking that, you know, I'm going to die if I don't receive some sort of assistance. So it was at that time that I went to the Victorian AIDS Council, spoke to a duty officer there and got a counselling appointment. Prior to that, I didn't know that the Victorian AIDS Council dealt with lesbians as well as gay men and so on. So that was an eye-opener. I received counselling from the Victorian AIDS Council for a couple of years and was going to the Carlton Clinic at that time and went on to antidepressants for the first time in my life. So those two supports were really positive. I think that had I not been so connected to the queer community anyway, I probably wouldn't known about those services. And indeed, if I lived in rural Australia, there would have been absolutely no support like that for me out there.
From what I can gather, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but there are different types of depression. For instance, yours appears to be, from what you've been saying, it comes on after a particular event, an upsetting event that's happened to you, whereas I believe other people are depressed without any obvious reasons for their depression. Would you say that was right, Rob?
Well, in my own case, you know, with the benefit of hindsight now, I realise that probably, you know, I had chronic depression to a certain degree probably since my early teens, but I didn't get it, you know, really started getting it treated till I was about 31. But it's interesting hearing Sam talk about, you know, you have the event and then there's the tears and then you sort of get going again. But it's the get going part for people with the chronic depression that's actually interesting, because it's fascinating hearing Sam say, you know, she was sort of disconnected from what was going on. And that was completely my experience. And I'm sure, you know, listeners who have had depression will also connect with this. Everything has this sort of really flat, black and white sort of feeling about it. And it's almost like, you know, you sort of get up in the morning and go, oh, you think I'll turn up for life this morning, but you're not really engaged with it. And that's a common sort of a thing, you know, you'll hear people talk about that sort of stuff. And I mean, it's interesting hearing Adam say, you know, 10 years ago, he would have said to someone, if they were depressed, I'll snap out of it. Mm. And I would have said that too. I would have said, oh, it's all bullshit. You know, you just got to, you know, get yourself going and blah, 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 blah. But the reality is that people don't want to be depressed.
Well, I imagine that's another problem. I mean, you may experience that people, if they're sympathetic with you, they'll do so for a while, but after a while they start to think, oh, you should be out of it by now, you know, and drift away. Has that been your experience, Sam?
Yeah, I mean, I've had quite a mixed bag of experience in terms of friends and family and their response. I think there is a real sort of idea out there that, you know, you get maybe a month of grief and so on, and then it's time to get over it. So I suppose my strategy has been to try and have people in my life, a combination of people that don't suffer from depression, but also those that do, because, you know, it makes it a lot easier to speak to people who have suffered from depression and do suffer from it at various times. You can also help them when they're in a down period and be supportive for each other. And that kind of acknowledgement of what you're going through and the kind of silent understanding, I think, is really important in those periods, because sometimes all you need to do is just be with the person. And, you know, experience, you know, no one's going to be able to talk me out of depression, but I just want somebody to sit there with me, watch a DVD, try and, you know, get me out of the house to get a coffee. And that might go on for months, you know, and that's not really pleasant, you know, all of the time. But I guess by being supportive myself of other people when I'm not feeling so down, I've managed to create a network where we can kind of all look after each other, which is so important.
You're listening to Allegra Non Troppo across Australia on the Community Radio Network. Our special guest, Rob Mitchell and Sam Stoker. We're talking about depression and gay and lesbian community. We'll be back in a little while and we're going to look at sexuality and mental illness. We're talking to Rob Mitchell and Sam Stoker. We're going to discuss a little bit about mental health issues related to sexuality. Okay, because a lot of young people go through mental health. Everybody goes through depression. But depression linked with sexuality. It's a really important one. Coming to terms with sexuality. Sam, tell us a little bit about, did you have any issues with sexuality and depression?
Yeah, I certainly did. I mean, I suppose looking at my life as an adult now, I'd say that my first experiences with feeling the kind of emptiness and sense of wrongness that I've come to know as depression and have labelled as depression came about as a very small child, between the ages of 5 and 7. I, you know, was biologically a female but very much identified as a boy. I called myself Sam when my birth name is Sarah. And, yeah, at that time I experienced, you know, a very great deal of I suppose, sense that I wasn't right, I wasn't in the right body, or my attitude towards my body was incorrect in some way. My fascination with boys' toys and all things boyish was wrong in some way. And that, you know, certainly leads to feelings of despair at a very young age. When I started to become sexually active, when I was about 12 or 13 and started having sex with girls my own age, I was victimised by my own peer group. I was punched in the face by one of my best friends after me and another female friend of mine had slept together the night before. And I think that certainly doesn't help somebody's mental health if you're struggling anyway. The kind of thing like that can be really devastating. And I certainly suffered a great deal from the peer victimisation in school in general, and the lack of support from teachers or even recognition or labelling of what was actually going on.
It's very difficult for teachers to be involved in issues of sexuality, you know. I mean, I'm obviously gay, and I work in primary school now, thank God. But the times I've worked in with secondary school kids, because I look gay, the number of times kids have come up to me and they said, Mr. Stobbs, I think I might be gay. I've had to say to them, look, I'm sorry, I can't help you. That's just completely out of my realms. It's too dangerous, because what happens is I give them a bit of advice or send them off somewhere, right, and it doesn't work out, or it's not helpful for them, or they get into trouble. Who's the first person that's going to get the blame? Me. So that's why the education department and all education institutions need to have in place programs to be able to deal with these issues. And I don't think they do. There's a few things here and there, but Rob Mitchell, there's nothing particularly concrete, is there?
Well, look, you're absolutely right. And, you know, it's only relatively recently here in Victoria that we've had the Minister for Education, State Minister for Education, Bronwyn Pike, put out a letter to all the schools, you know, sort of reminding them, you know, what their responsibilities were. But, you know, the theme that we keep coming back to in this is we've got a systemic problem. This research that we have time and time again telling us that the vilification and the degradation that occurs in, you know, places like schools and sporting clubs and so on, that's what causes the, you know, huge increase in the suicidal thought rate. And, you know, Sam's story there of being punched in the face, that is, you know, the one event, the physical abuse, the physical violence, is the event that takes it from 30% to 60%. So at all costs, we must stop our young people being abused, being physically abused and being psychologically abused. You know, talk about bullying, that's, you know, that's shorthand. You know, what you're talking about there is child abuse. And we need to get our hands around that. So we need to stop the physical abuse in schools and sporting clubs and so on. We need to stop the psychological abuse. And I know a lot of people who are listening to this now are straight. And I would say to you, this is Parenting 101. This is not complicated.
See, I was very concerned to hear what Adam had to say just then, because I can imagine that if some kid goes to a teacher to ask for help, it probably took them a lot of courage to do that, and then just to be basically rejected by the teacher, it would be devastating to them. There must be a better way of approaching
it. There must be.
And look, this is what's reflected in the research again, time and time again, and it's not rocket science. I mean, you've got young people, you know, in their late teens, they're critically aware of what their peers think of them. And, you know, it's very important to them for peer acceptance, because that gives them a sense of connectedness. And it's the connectedness that we know that is critical to good mental health. And you're absolutely right. It does take a lot of courage for someone who's still, you know, trying to sort themselves out and you know, to experience that sort of sense of rejection. But I say again, we need a systemic response. And, you know, Beyond Blue, and I keep coming back to them, but Beyond Blue's clinical advisor, one of them says, you know, with the recent tragic suicides in Geelong, you know, the cluster of suicides in the school there, he said, you know, I'm going to keep saying this, it's about depression, it's about depression. And we all go, yeah, it is about depression. And what are you doing about the rates of depression in same-sex attracted youth?
It's a lot of the schools, most schools now have counsellors, you know, the school counsellors, and they're probably okay at dealing with these issues when they come up. I would think now that it's probably a lot better than it was. But the other thing that happens is, and I've seen this happen so many times, is a young person goes to their parents and they say, I think I'm gay. And the parents then assume there's something wrong with the children and send them off to psychologists, okay? And that sends a huge negative message. Now, the parents are doing it out of concern and love for their child. But what they probably don't realise is they're saying to that child, you're homosexual, you need to see a psychologist. If a child comes up to the parents and is heterosexual, they don't send the heterosexual child off to a psychologist, but they send the homosexual child off to a psychologist.
But then it would be up to the psychologist to reassure the child that there's nothing wrong with them, wouldn't it?
Some of them do, not all of them do.
Well, look, you know, I just point out that, you know, for a lot of psychiatrists and psychologists, a lot of the training that they had was inherently homophobic. It's only a very recent thing that this enlightenment is starting to filter through. When you talk to Sue Hackney, who runs the Way Out Project out of Kyneton, you know, she'll give you a spectrum of stories to do with schools. Some of them are absolutely fantastic. Some of them, there's, you know, a pile of work to be done. And again, this is part of a systemic response. And with Mental Health Week around the corner, there is no point us, as parents, wringing our hands and sort of saying, well, look, this is terrible that the suicide rate is not, you know, that the number of suicides per year is not going down. We've got no idea why. The reality is we've got plenty of research to tell us what is actually going on. But we're not going to get anywhere while we choose, and I use that word deliberately, choose not to look at it.
Sam, we'll have a little bit more from you on your experiences. Now, one of the things that you said that caused me a little bit of concern was when you realized that you needed some help, you ended up going to the VAC. Now, in the breadth of the gay and lesbian community, was there nothing a little bit closer to home for you?
In a word, no. There certainly isn't anything, to my knowledge, and I probably would know, I'm pretty in touch with these kind of issues now. There's nothing that caters specifically to
younger
lesbians or young women in general. I really can't think of anywhere like that that I could refer another young lesbian experiencing mental illness.
How helpful was the help you got from the VAC?
Oh, look, I had a counselling program through the VAC and went to see a counsellor once a week for about a year or something like that. And it certainly was helpful. It was, you know, the counsellor I had was a good counsellor, sensitive and kind counsellor that was anti-homophobic, which is certainly, you know, the first time that I've been anywhere near a psychologist or a counsellor that hasn't had really, you know, bizarre and inappropriate ideas about sexuality and gender and so on. So, yeah, I thought it was really good and I really appreciated the help that they gave me there.
So, Rob Mitchell, this almost completely proves your theory, what you've been saying, Sam's experiences.
Well, look, I think that, and, you know, and I congratulate Sam for coming on the show, and it's not easy to sort of, you know, sit here sending this out into the ether. But this is a story that gets replicated time and time and time again.
Is it?
And, you know, I'm just reminded, I had a meeting with Dr. Lynn Hillier from Arches the first time I met Dr. Hillier, and we were talking about mental health and, you know, so on in the context of sporting clubs. And after, at the end of the meeting, she looked at me and Dr. Hillier said, "Rob, it's time." And it is. I mean, this is all bullshit.
Okay. Is it more pronounced in other parts of Australia, metropolitan cities, regional, rural communities?
The data tells us that in terms of young same-sex attracted people in the cities, they have obviously more chances to get help.
Mm-hmm.
They have more chances to get positive peer support simply because of the number of people that are around. People in rural areas, you know, the constant thing that comes out of that, and this is why, you know, I am... you know, particularly disturbed that Beyond Blue keeps rejecting her funding applications, is that in a rural context, you know, people just don't know where to go. And that's what the research tells us time and time again. You know, when you look at Writing Themselves In, which is now in its second iteration, there is just yards of research to tell us that the problem is most acute in country Australia.
Writing Themselves In is a research project that came out of La Trobe University.
Correct.
Yeah.
And it was, in fact, you know, that was the basis on which I originally approached Beyond Blue in June last year and said, well, look, you know, you've got to get La Trobe University, you know, you've got to get yourselves up to speed, which they did initially, but then it all just falls away.
If the listener would like to go to the Allegro website, allegro.org.au, and on the front page you'll see a link to Rob Mitchell's webpage that he's created called Sweet FA. Now, tell us what this is all about. You're on this personal mission, aren't you?
Well, look, you know, this is not the first time I've sat in this chair and been on a personal mission.
It's true.
But, I mean, you know, you look at the data and then, okay, so you know, in my case, you get on to Beyond Blue and other people have as well. I mean, there are plenty of other people who have, you know, been doing stuff in the background, getting them or trying to get them to get them up to speed. But you say, look, okay, right, you do the research summary, which was done in June 2008. They commissioned it in June 2008. They get that delivered in September 2008. They then sit on it for 9 months. Jill Stark, the health reporter from the Sunday Age, you know, writes a story saying, you know, they're not doing anything. There's this burst of activity. I am just of the view that where you've got an organisation that has yards of federal support, it's got yards of state support, it's getting millions upon millions of dollars of community money every year, it's got a very high-powered board. You know, there's no lack of, you know, doctors and professors and clinical advisors, the whole shooting match. It's got yards, you know, 10 or 12 million sitting in the bank. What is the one reason that sticks out like dog's balls that they are not doing anything about our particular issue. In this particular case, it's GLBDI. And, you know, there's a thing in science called Occam's razor, where you observe phenomena and you've got multiple explanations. You take the explanation that makes the least assumptions. And in this particular case, that reason they're not doing anything is because they don't want to. It's as simple as that. And that's what we've got to get our heads around. And in some respects, it's a very difficult to have with people in the conversation to have with people in my own community, because what I'm essentially saying to, you know, gay men and lesbians and bisexual men in this community here, look, you know, sorry about the fact that you've had to fight HIV for 25 years, but here's another one that you're going to have to, you know, get on the saddle and push, because you see, when HIV appeared back in the early 80s. What happened was a group of people around Australia correctly identified that if we didn't get ourselves going within the community, that we were literally facing Armageddon. And that's the reason that we got going. The problem with mental health is that it's been so busted for so long, it's part of the furniture.
Is it really that endemic? And don't people grow out of it?
Well, Adam, what do you say when you know, we know, I mean, we know that the rate of suicidal ideation and depression in the broader heterosexual population is 5%. We know that.
And it's 25% in gay and lesbian. So,
well, it's 20% gay. And
what do we do? What do Beyond Blue? Or should it be a wider issue? Should this be something the DHS is doing, the Department of Human Services?
Well, this is part of the problem, because what they say is, oh, look, why would you have a go at us? We're putting heaps of money into Beyond Blue, the National Depression Initiative.
Yeah.
You know, why would you have a go at us? You know, what are we doing wrong? I mean, we're funding it. And what we've got to say to them, we've got to say to Nicola Roxon, the Federal Health Minister, we've got to say to Lisa Neville and Daniel Andrews, who are the Victorian ministers, and indeed any other state ministers, and to the Movember Foundation, you are having a snow job done on you. You know, they bitch and they complain that they've got no money. And it's being, you know, I mean, from a GLBDI perspective, Beyond Blue is a parasite.
Okay. You've certainly nailed it right down there. So what could they actually do? Let's look at some of the physical things and tangible and realistic things that Beyond Blue or DHS could do to make life better.
Okay. When you look at Beyond Blue, they've got all this infrastructure set up. You go to their website, and the way that they work is obviously they fund research, and, you know, that's great, and they, you know, do their research projects. Then what they do is they fund a lot of other community stuff as well. Like, and I mentioned neonatal before, you know, women who have just had children or who are pregnant, you know, they have particular issues around mental health. And what happens is their sort of standard package of messages, if you like, around mental health are then tailored and refined for that particular target group of people. And they do that with Indigenous people as well. And then that makes perfect sense. I mean, you know, you don't need a psychiatry, you don't need to have a medical degree to work out that the messages that go out to Indigenous people are slightly different to expectant mums. And then you look at the other projects they're doing, like the Men's Shed stuff, okay? So that they do stuff in rural Australia. They also do stuff, you know, for culturally and linguistically diverse people. Mm-hmm. So they've got all that infrastructure there set up. They've got ambassadors, you know, that go around and give talks and so on. Now, I don't think it is a big ask for them to put same-sex attracted into that same system.
Right.
But they don't do it, because they say, oh, look, we are doing stuff, but the research is inconsistent. In fact, you know, you listen to Leona Young, and, you know, on the ABC, and she's, oh, well, look, you know, the research is inconsistent. And, you know, that's bullshit. There's plenty of research to tell us what's going on. They actually need to do something. And the reason, I know parasite is a strong word, but there is, you know, everybody telling us that there's, you know, a problem with the mental health system in terms of it's maxed out. You know, there's just not enough resources.
So do you think this is going to make any difference, this campaign that you're running on at the moment?
Well, I mean, it has to. There's no option to fail with it, because... Okay. Because, I mean, and quite frankly, as a community, and I'm talking, you know, same-sex attracted here now, you know, we've got nothing to lose. We're already in the shit so far.
Okay. It's a no-lose situation. We don't have anything, so we can't lose anything.
We can't lose.
Sam, would it have helped you if there had been, say, something a little bit more, like a lesbian health line or something, counselling service?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think if there had been somewhere that was simple and easy to access, like I'm, you know, a young person that likes using the internet, spends a lot of time online. If Beyond Blue, for instance, had some really clear signage on the website that said, you know, are you a young queer person, go to this site, here are some options, here are some really good counselling services or something like that, something that actually targets who you are and what you might be wanting or what you might be needing, and links to, I don't know, websites of other people that have been through depression or something like that. I mean, that certainly would help. All of those things would help. I think really, though, in particular, from my point of view, I mean, my family's from the country of Western Australia. It's one thing having a few things set up in inner city Melbourne or even inner city Perth, but out in, you know, regional Western Australia, and I'm sure it's the same here in Victoria, there's just less than nothing. You know, the help that you receive out in those country areas is probably more damaging than anything else. So I'd certainly like to see something done about that for all of our friends out in the country.
Rob Mitchell.
I can only echo that. I mean, and you know, Sam has nailed it completely. And if listeners are wondering what was the straw that broke the camel's back here, and what sort of motivated me to get this going, and why I'm so I guess so hot on this with Beyond Blue, is that after the article went in with the Sunday Age, Beyond Blue got in touch with Joy, because you know it was suggested in not only in the article but also some op-ed stuff I did in the papers, that what, you know, and what should happen is that Beyond Blue should partner with an organisation like Joy and so on to start getting these messages out. And in fact, Beyond Blue did ask for, you know, some quotes, you know, for a sponsorship package during Mental Health Week to partner with Joy FM. And then I find out that that's all just gone off into the ether, and Beyond Blue won't actually partner with Joy in terms of, you know, buying a small ad package. And we're talking, you know, to run a week's worth of ads, you know, a few hundred dollars out of an organisation that has yearly revenues of $23 million. They couldn't even get that up. And their sum total of interaction with Joy is to send us some show bags and some fridge magnets.
Why? Why don't they want to be involved with us? Why don't they want to engage with the gay and lesbian community?
Well, you know, Doug Pollard had Leona Young on during the week, and oh yes, we are doing something, and we need to do more research. And we say, but what about actually doing stuff like you do with, you know, Indigenous? Oh well, you know, the research is inconsistent. It is just so, it's obscene.
It's frustrating. Are there, apart from Beyond Blue, are there any other avenues that you could go down to try and see if you can get something established for the gay and lesbian community?
Look, I think there are two options. Either Beyond Blue gets going, or, and this is starting to look like a preferred option in terms of our community, is we go to Nicola Rocks and we go to Lisa Neville and we say, look, they can't get their head around it. Don't bother. Let's all work out, you know, whether it's 10% of the money that they're putting towards them, whatever. Let's get that dough, and we'll put it into agencies that can do the job. And we have a reference committee set up from the community there, because we've got some, you know, we are really, really, really good at health education, Adam.
Okay.
Because we've had to be.
Yep. I know there are several programs around. ACON in New South Wales run a terrific program where they go out into schools and educate young people about diverse sexuality. And we had a young man here called Michael Colling a few months ago who does the same sort of thing. So there are programs out there. I wonder how effective they are.
They're only effective if we keep funding them. You know, there's no point in these sort of one-off things. This is a health issue, and we've seen this with HIV. If we give it a burst and then stop, once we stop, you know, putting the solution out there, the problem starts to rear its head again. And this is no different.
Okay. Sam, you've had these episodes of depression through your life. How are you now?
Oh, at the moment, I'm okay. I find that the way for me to deal with my episodes of depression is to try and have projects and positive things going on in my life, and try and keep people in my life that are positive, and try and get rid of the people that are playing a negative role. So I guess, you know, every year is a different story, and it's up and it's down. But I guess now I sort of look at things in terms of what's going to happen in the next 10 years, as opposed to, you know, what's going to happen in the next week, and try not to focus too much on the little things and trying to look at the big picture.
Is that one of the reasons why you're here at Joy?
Yeah, absolutely. I always try and have a project on the go, and I just finished the Taste of Radio course here at Joy 94.9. It's been really positive. You know, even throughout this process, there have been some weeks when I just haven't been able to attend class or have turned up to attend class and said one word to, you know, a person there who, you know, I know and like, and just have to leave immediately because of, you know, depression and anxiety and issues like that. But I suppose you just have to, you know, try and not beat yourself up too much about the sort of little things that you stumble over, and just try and look at the big picture and see what you're doing as a person, and try and stay positive and try and be around organisations like Joy, I suppose, that have the right message and have a positive message for queer people.
I think that's a wonderful message to the community. Thank you, Sam. Rob Mitchell.
Adam, I would just like to say to everybody listening to this now, regardless of, you know, your sexual orientation, you know, whether you've got kids or not, you know, that there's an opportunity here with the Federal Senate inquiry into suicide for some sunlight to be shed on what's going on here. Now, the inquiry has been instigated, as I said, on the back of those figures from the Bureau of Statistics showing that there's been no reduction in suicide, despite the, you know, millions upon millions of dollars that have been thrown at it. So clearly that's not working. I would say when you're in a hole, you put down your shovel and stop digging. And there's an opportunity here for people to go to that inquiry website. You can just Google it up with Senate Suicide Inquiry. And in fact, I think we'll put links on both our websites to point people in that direction. We have got to, as a community, and I'm talking broad community now, we have got to get this sorted, because there is no point in wringing our hands and saying, you know, particularly yep. suicide, until we get sorted.
And on a personal, individual level, people across the community, look out for people who you know who go through depression.
Absolutely.
They need the help, and they need the fellowship of people who are not depressed, and do what you can to help them. Unfortunately, I'm not much good in that department because I never know what to do. I've got a lot of people around me at the moment with low self-esteem. That's another area that perhaps one day we can talk about.
You're a good listener.
Rob Mitchell, it's been terrific having you on Allegro
Non
Troppo. Thank you for bringing this to our attention. Sam, thank you so much for sharing your personal stories. It's been terrific, and it's been a good inspiration and a good pointer for other people to be able to learn from your experiences.
Thanks for having me.
Okay. We'll be back with another Allegro next week, everyone. Bye.
Bye.